So please welcome Michael Kaplan.
All right, you guys, thanks for staying. With extra time comes great responsibility. Harris was crashing again. Harris was my best friend and my writing partner. He was one of the smartest people, one of the funniest people that I knew, but for the third time that year, he was doing a romantic crash and burn, and it was midsummer. Harris always fell for the same kind of woman. Blonde, flighty, whimsical, the sort that you would imagine running barefoot through the glen, trailing a windsock behind her. And it wasn't like these women would unlock some secret whimsical streak in Harris. He would just clench and go into this mode of, I must have the wood sprite. And he would, what would happen is that the more uninhibited they were, the more repressed he would become until he was like a 19th century vicar, just wincing and smiling indulgently while the little lady danced in the parlor, and then he'd whip his horse savagely on the way back to the parish. Harris would befriend these women and dote upon them, and if they were having man troubles, all the better, he wanted to hear it. And slowly, agonizingly, he would reveal his true feelings, and then they would be shocked and betrayed, at which point he would call them on every ounce of their shit and scorch the earth between them and leave them shaken and seeking comfort among the woodland creatures. Harris had no woodland creatures in his corner. He had me and he had Josh. We were in our 20s, living in Los Angeles in the 1980s. Now, don't get your hopes up. These were not, cokeheads cutting a debauched path through the singles world. These were sensitive, very cerebral 80s men, and we all had issues. Harris just couldn't stand the concept of dating and flirting and courtship. He just couldn't square himself with it. The idea that he should change his clothes for a date, or that he wasn't supposed to tell somebody on the second date exactly how he was feeling. He was just furious about that. Josh had a completely different concept, and that was that dating and courtship was a competition. It was like a chess game. If you saw any two people dating, one of them was winning and one of them was losing. One of them cared more than the other. And if things remained that way, then eventually the winner would say game over, or the loser would flee a bad situation. But if things evened out, you would have, like this endless extra inning baseball game with, both sides trying to score another run. And that was Josh's idea of marriage. Two people in love, deadlocked, trying to get the upper hand. Josh's weakness was that he fell for women who seemed to have secrets, like, a drinking problem with a mean streak that went with it, or I actually prefer women, or in one case, despite what it looks like, I'm not gonna marry you, here's your ring. And so these two guys would get together and go to Neverland. I am never going to fall in love with another blonde. I'm never going to go out with another woman who says she's best friends with her mom. I am never going to let a woman complain about her boyfriend on a date. But I never saw the point of all these nevers, because even if you don't repeat mistakes, you're still gonna make them. There's plenty of new mistakes on the horizon. It got to the point where Josh insisted that the Bob Marley song, No Woman, No Cry, wasn't meant to be interpreted as somebody consoling a woman. It was dating advice. Hey, no woman, no cry. Okay, so where did I fit in this mix? I was hung up on my college girlfriend, and she lived in New York City. So we were doing this no commitment, long distance relationship kind of thing. And so that meant that 3 weeks a year, I was involved in this, you know, high octane, operatic, romantic situation. And for 3 other weeks, I was just devastated because we had parted and she didn't want to commit and it wasn't going to turn into something more. And for the other 46 weeks, I was prepared to sort of lightly date. And I liked courtship, I liked dating, I liked all of that. I brought a lot of energy and exuberance and little romantic touches to it. And then the moment I was told, okay, we really need to slow this down, or, you know, I don't think we should sleep together again, I would immediately agree. Absolutely mystifying the other women. And it wasn't like I was trying to manipulate them. I just liked rules. I really liked rules. I missed college badly. And in real life, there were no midterms and there were no grades. So the moment they drew the line, I was like, yeah, absolutely, you have a syllabus. I'm going to follow it. And this would totally bewilder them. And the women that I went out with, they would draw the line and then they would have to erase it themselves. And I was enough of a passive-aggressive jerk to say, you know, are you sure? I mean, remember what you said. And they'd go, oh, well, I just feel like being bad. Or, you know, it was so cozy in the restaurant tonight. And it was like sex was like the extra dessert they weren't supposed to have. And, you know, I had this weird combination of energy and detachment, and I would present myself as a fat-free dessert. You know, and sometimes that worked. So back to Harris now, okay? He had fallen for this blonde Southern gal named Kat, short for Catherine, who was very vocal about her underwhelming relationship with White, short for White Boy. Really, everybody called him White Boy. I never knew his actual name. He was part of a group of transplanted Southerners living in the San Fernando Valley. And at the center of this community were Frank and Tinker, a much-loved couple. They were kind of coming apart at the seams, so Tinker was throwing parties all the time to kind of, you know, get that community support and that group hug to fuse them back together. And in the long run, it didn't work, but that summer there were a lot of great parties. And I would go with Harris, and he would have, you know, a very serious conversation in the corner with Kat, and then he would pump Tinker for information about what might be going on and how things were going there. And I can remember one time he stood watching Kat as she reached into this nicely embroidered denim bag and pulled out a tube of sunscreen and handed it to White, who was very pale, and then reached in again and took out his baseball glove and gave it to him. And Harris just stood there wondering, you know, what life would be like if all of his things were in that embroidered denim bag. And I could see him just sort of filling up with yearning. And he pigeonholed Tinker in a corner and just, you know, asked her again, pumped her for more information. Did he have a chance? Would it possibly work out? Where were things with Kat and White? I drove him home. He was tearing up. I didn't know what to do, so I called in Josh. Josh laid down the law. You know, enough of this. You've got to call her tonight. You've got to tell her exactly how you feel, and then never, ever again, you don't do this again. And amazingly, Harris called her, and he told Kat, and she was appalled. She was hostile. She scorched the earth before Harris had a chance. It was like, what were you thinking? Do you think I am so shallow that I would up and leave White just because you're telling me this? You're supposed to be my friend. I don't want your love. I don't want your yearning. I mean, it absolutely spun Harris around. And he said, okay, fine, I'm done. I'm never going to do that again. Except a month later, he told us he was in love with Tinker. Did I mention Tinker was blonde? To his credit, though, he told her right away. She said, no, not interested, but he didn't scorch the earth. They managed to maintain the friendship. To this day, they're friends. Josh, the sweet Jewish guy who came from a progressive left-wing household, married a Phoenix Republican, daughter of a naval commander who plays golf with John McCain, and had a Catholic mass wedding. And I visit him in Phoenix from time to time, and he seems happy, and he loves his family, but he lets me know that his wife has definitely scored a few more runs than he has, and he's looking to get back in the game, back on the scoreboard. Harris, I used to think, was just such a total curmudgeon about dating and courtship and flirting until I realized he was just waiting for the technology to catch up with him. Because eventually, he met a woman online who was a dark-haired mathematician on the East Coast, and he could sit there in whatever clothes he wanted and tell her exactly what was going on his mind right there in the moment. And after months and months, they eventually met, and they fell in love, and they got married. And I really wish I could tell you that that's the happy ending to the story and that they're still together. But about 4 years into their marriage, just for fun, to do something different, she dyed her hair blonde.